Welcome to Onc Live On Air. I'm your host today, Courtney Flaherty. Onc Live On Air is a podcast from Onc Live, which provides oncology professionals the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, Onc Live covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. In today's episode, we had the pleasure of speaking with Amin Nassar, MD, and Elias Boufarat, MD, regarding their evaluation of the feasibility and accuracy of using next-generation sequencing mutation signature for assessing and identifying mismatch repair-deficient tumors compared with standard MMR immunohistochemistry testing. Dr. Nassar is a hematology oncology fellow at Yale University in New Haven, Connecticut. Dr. Boufarat is a postdoctoral research fellow in the Department of Medicine at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston, Massachusetts. The retrospective study found that an additional 6.9% of patients with dMMR colorectal or endometrial cancer that were missed by IHC but detected by NGS-based mutation signature experienced comparable clinical outcomes to those of patients identified as dMMR by both IHC and mutation signature. Moreover, improvements in overall survival and time to treatment failure were observed in the discordant group versus those with concordant MMR-proficient tumors. The median overall survival was also prolonged in patients with discordant CRC or endometrial tumors who received immune checkpoint inhibitors, compared to those who were not previously exposed to checkpoint inhibitors and received other systemic therapies. Ultimately, investigators concluded that tumor-only NGS demonstrated high sensitivity for detecting MMR signature analysis in patients with CRC or endometrial cancer. In our exclusive interview, Drs. Nassar and Boufarat explained how tumor-only NGS could address the limitations of IHC testing for MMR mutation signatures across several tumor types, discussed primary findings and concordance rates from the study, and proposed revisiting guideline recommendations on diagnostic testing to reduce the impact of misdiagnosis of MMR status on treatment outcomes.
My name is Amin Nassar. I'm a second-year hematology-oncology fellow at Yale, currently pursuing a PhD as well during my fellowship, mostly in tumor immunology.
I'm Elias Boufarat, and I'm currently a second-year postdoc fellow at the Brigham and Women's Hospital under the mentorship of Dr. David Kwiatkowski. I'm interested in thoracic oncology research and cardiac research, and also genomics and cancer.
Could you explain the rationale behind assessing the concordance and MMR determination by IHC versus NGS, including, you know, any relevant background info? What were you really seeking to address through this?
The mismatch repair proteins are proteins that are present in the cells and usually repair DNA errors during replication. And sometimes there are some genetic conditions, especially in cancers, whenever those proteins are mutated, they make up non-functional proteins, and thus they won't be able to repair correctly the DNA, and this will lead to a higher rate of DNA error accumulation. And this process usually happens mostly in colorectal and endometrial cancer. These are the cancers where this condition mostly happens. And this is what we call MMR deficiency, whenever those proteins are not functioning correctly. And whenever those patients have this condition, they respond really well to immunotherapy. Well, the gold standard right now to detect MMR deficiency is by doing an IHC staining or immunohistochemistry staining. But we have shown that there is another method, which is using the next generation sequencing technique, that we could also detect that this deficiency with a higher sensitivity. And this is actually what we're trying to show in this.
The standard of care right now in the US and in Europe is to use immunohistochemistry just because it has a quick turnaround time. It's pretty accessible. And basically, you just stain for those four proteins. Accordingly, you determine if a tumor is mismatch repair deficient or not. But one issue with this methodology is that sometimes you can have a mutation that happens in the epitope or the antigen, basically, which does not affect the expression of the protein, but actually affects the function. So what happens is, because immunohistochemistry relies on antigen-antibody binding, if there's a mutation in the epitope or antigen that preserves the antigen but disrupts the functionality, immunohistochemistry can actually miss what we call a mismatch repair deficiency and is considered as a mismatch repair proficient tumor, which tells you basically there's made us think, okay, there's actually a subset of patients that are being missed. Let's quantify the subset and let's see basically if there is benefit that they gain from immunotherapy, even though they were missed by immunohistochemistry, but can we detect them by a different methodology and show that they derive benefit? Because, you know, NGS or next-generation sequencing, at the end of the day, it's a broad-scale genotyping of multiple regions in the genome. So instead of looking only at one region, which is the antigen epitope binding, you're looking at multiple features here that can increase your sensitivity, which made us basically hypothesize that next-generation sequencing is going to be more sensitive and more accurate. And this has been a long discussion by different guidelines, ASCO, ESMO, College of American Pathologists. But as of today, there wasn't any data showing that next-generation sequencing can actually salvage and actually show that those salvage actually derive benefits from immunotherapy. So for that reason, hasn't made it to the guidelines as of yet.
Before we move forward, I just wanted to ask if there were any other insights you wanted to provide about some of the background info. I know there was that prior study on MSI and MMR IHC status with immune checkpoint inhibitors. Could you highlight sort of the consequences of misdiagnosis that were sort of elucidated here?
Immune checkpoint therapy is very effective in patients with mismatch repair deficiency. However, we also know that there's a subset of patients that do not derive benefit. And the question has always been why. So in that study, what they did is they looked at patients, especially those that did not derive benefit, and they noticed basically that a lot of those actually were, basically patients that were misdiagnosed and basically were not truly mismatch repair deficient, which begs the question, is IHC also like calling some false positives at times when it shouldn't be? So for that reason, you know, other than the false negative, there's also a false positive angle that you always want to think about for a test. And that's another reason why it was interesting for us to look into NGS as a potential a methodology that could actually limit the false positives, but also improve on detecting the false negatives.
Could you elaborate a little bit on the methodology employed in this study, including the sources of data and, you know, any other important criteria?
So mainly the inclusion criteria was that these were patients usually with advanced colorectal cancer or endometrial cancer that are diagnosed by BWH pathologists. And I had to access those patients in specific, and they had to have IHC that was done and an oncopanel tumor sequencing done at Dana-Farber from that same tumor. So the IHC was done on the same pathologic block, and the sequencing was also done on that same block as well. This is an important criterion. And after doing that, we checked a subset of patients that received ICI therapy with at least one dose of ICI, and we tried to check how these patients are doing in terms of survival. In terms of IHC, the staining was done for four genes, MLH1, MSH2, PMS2, and MSH6. And the result was categorized as either intact or absent. If one of those proteins did not positively stain, that was called an absent. In terms of NGS, how we defined a signature, an MMR signature in NGS, was as the presence of more than one single nucleotide insertion or deletion in a homopolymer region of more than two or equal to two mononucleotide repeats. This is in terms of technicalities. And I would also add that to what Amin was saying in terms of IHC, that sometimes you might also have subclonal results there, whereby some cells are stained, some cells are not stained, and this could also lead to missing stuff in terms of IHC and it being equivocal probably in terms of results. This is mainly the inclusion criteria for the patients.
Because we've had two different methodologies, so again, for IHC, absent, intact, for NGS, either deficient or proficient based on meeting the criteria that you mentioned, patients were then divided into three groups. Either they had concordant results between NGS and IHC, and within the concordant, there's two different groups. Either they were concordantly proficient, so for example, they would have an intact IHC protein expression of all four proteins, and they would also have an MMR signature that's proficient by NGS, or they could be concordant deficient, whereby both NGS and IHC are saying the same thing. IHC is saying it's absent, NGS is saying it's deficient in the MMR pathway. So those are two groups that are concordant, and there was one group that was discordant, which are patients that were deficient by NGS MMR testing, but had an intact IHC protein stain for all four proteins. And that was the most important cohort for us, or of interest in this study.
So you have two tests really that we are comparing, and you have two outcomes for each test. And then we compared the concordance and discordance between those tests. And by virtue of 2x2, you get mainly four categories. And we looked at three categories because one of those categories, we did not identify such patients.
That category is basically the ones that are proficient by NGS, but were absent by IHC. So the opposite. So discordant, but the opposite way. We did not actually have any patient in that category that we found. I think, you know, the only three that were found in that study were not treated with immunotherapy. So overall, there were three patients out of like 1,600, but they weren't treated with immunotherapy. So in the immunotherapy cohort, none of the patients were in this category. So that's why we couldn't look at their outcomes.
This is hence why we have three categories. By NGS, you have a category where you have NGS proficient. That is the result of NGS that gave you a proficient result, and an IHC intact. And in that case, both tests are giving a concordant result, meaning that there is no MMR signature in terms of NGS, and in terms of IHC, these proteins are intact. That's one category. The second one is the NGS test gave a deficient NGS result, and the IHC was intact. So this is sort of a discordance here between the two tests. And the third category, which is the NGS deficient, where NGS gave you a deficient result, and the IHC was absent. And so in that case, we have a concordant result as well. So we have two concordant, whether it's positive-positive or negative-negative. And then we have negative-positive in terms of NGS deficient IHC. These are mainly the three categories that we classified our patients into.
What were the primary findings regarding the concordance between MMR determination with IHC and the NGS signature assessment? Were there any specific discrepancies that were observed?
The first question was, what is the rate of discordance that we're seeing? How many are being missed by IHC but yet detected by NGS as mismatch repair deficient? First of all, we focused on the colorectal cancer cohort. It was our largest cohort as expected. We had three different races that we analyzed, whites, Asians, and blacks. And consistently across the board, we found that in each and every single race, almost 1% of the patients within each category was missed by IHC, but detected by NGS, for mismatch repair deficiency. So 1 out of 100 patients actually diagnosed with colorectal cancer were being missed by IHC, which is a big number if you consider the amount of patients that are diagnosed in the US. As for endometrial cancer, here we didn't divide them by race just because we didn't have the numbers to do so. But we had almost close to above 200 patients that were in the endometrial cancer diagnosis that had both NGS and IHC. And we noted that close to 6% were missed by IHC, but detected by NGS. So, you know, again, endometrial cancer is obviously less prevalent than colorectal. But here, because the prevalence of missing by IHC is, you know, almost sixfold higher, it still is also a big number in the endometrial cancer cohort as well.
Again, we get back to these three categories, whereby either the results are concordant positive, concordant negative, or just discordant from both NGS and IHC, whereby NGS detected the deficiency and IHC did. I'm going to go through every group alone. The NGS deficient, IHC intact, whereby these patients were detected, so they had a deficiency by NGS, and the patients that had a deficiency by NGS and a deficiency by IHC and received at least one dose of immunotherapy had a very similar survival curve as compared to the patients who were concordant by NGS and IHC but had proficient NGS and IHC intact, meaning that both NGS and IHC did not detect the deficiency. Compared to the group that did not have any deficiency by NGS detected, the groups that did have a deficiency did perform better, and those that had discordance in NGS and IHC did perform even better, as well as the group that had deficiency by NGS and IHC, and even way better than those who were proficient by NGS and intact by IHC.
You know, as you mentioned, we have the three groups that we discussed. Two were concordant, one was discordant. Our hypothesis was that those that were discordant, i.e. detected by NGS but missed by IHC, were going to do as good as those that were detected by both as mismatch repair deficient. That was our hypothesis. And that is actually what we saw. We saw that their overall survival and their time to next line was very, very similar between both the concordant positive, as you mentioned, which is detected by both IHC and by NGS as mismatch repair deficient. They did as well as those that were discordant. So that was the key point that we found. But then we also compared them to our controls, which are the patients that were found to be mismatch repair proficient by both NGS and intact by IHC. And we saw that those that were discordant did way better than those that were mismatch repair proficient and intact by IHC. So not only did they do as good as those that were detected as mismatch repair deficient by both NGS and IHC, but they also did way better than those that were basically considered proficient and intact by IHC. So which tells you basically that these patients are deriving benefit even though they were missed by IHC.
So the idea is that in patients who are discordant by NGS and IHC, meaning NGS deficient, IHC positive, and are concordant by NGS and IHC, meaning NGS deficient and IHC absent, our results showed that the overall survival and time to treatment failure with ICI were similar for these both groups, which contrasted with the results for patients who are concordant, meaning NGS proficient, and IHC intact results, and this is with a very low p-value. In conclusion, the patients with endometrial or colorectal cancer and discordant NGS deficient IHC intact results, they had better survival when treated with ICI regimen as compared to these other categories.
So we had a cohort of patients, as you mentioned, that were discordant, whereby NGS detected mismatch repair deficiency, but IHC did not. So what we did is we zoomed in and honed in on this cohort. And we looked at the patients that were treated with either immunotherapy or those that were never treated with immunotherapy, but rather received something else, like chemotherapy, for example. And our hypothesis was that, okay, among all those patients that had discordant data, if you had a discordant data in your tumor, but you received immunotherapy, you were more likely to derive benefit compared to a patient that had discordant data, but did not receive any immunotherapy. Because if you go back to the initial FDA approval, immunotherapy is approved for tumors that are mismatch repair deficient. And we know that those patients, if you give them immunotherapy, they do very well and way better than other treatments that we typically give, like chemotherapy, for example. So our hypothesis was that, okay, if you're a patient that have discordant, if you're truly mismatch repair deficient, you should actually derive a lot of benefit from immunotherapy, way more than what we would expect from chemotherapy. This is exactly what we saw. We saw that if a physician had treated a patient with discordant data with immunotherapy, those patients did way better than when the patient was treated with chemotherapy. Which tells you basically that really those patients are behaving as if they're mismatch repair deficient from the get-go, but they were just missed.
Considering the sort of projected number of additional MMR deficient cases that you sort of mentioned would be identified annually through NGS, how could this impact population health? And, you know, what do you recommend for revisiting guideline recommendations on diagnostic testing?
NGS analysis of the MMR signature using what we have in Dana-Farber somewhat is more sensitive to IHC analysis of cancer specimen. If this method were applied across the whole U.S. to all patients, I think that thousands more MMRD colorectal cancer and endometrial cancer patients would be identified and would benefit from the immunotherapy in comparison to doing IHC alone. So really, our findings here really suggest that revisiting some of the MMR diagnostic guideline, emphasizing the benefit of NGS MMR D-signature analysis is really important. And we can use it as a test to help IHC whenever those patients who are really missed by IHC and are detected by NGS this is going to be a large number of patients that would be candidate for immunotherapy and who otherwise would not really receive it. And the survival curves really showed these patients do really well whenever treated with immunotherapy.
Immunohistochemistry is here to stay, that's for sure, because it's quick, it's cheap, it's available. You know, at the end of the day, a lot of our patients are treated at community hospitals, whereby they don't always have the luxury of having sequencing done. And sometimes the turnaround time for sequencing takes, you know, a couple of weeks. So at the end of the day, I don't think NGS is going to take the place of IHC, at least for the near future. However, I do think it's an important complementary test that should be done whenever available, because you don't want to miss those 5,000, 6,000 patients because they really could derive benefit and you're missing an opportunity. So I think, you know, whenever it's possible, moving it earlier in the diagnostic algorithm for patients and basically, you know, doing as a complementary test to IHC. Whenever a patient has an IHC that shows that the tumor is intact, I don't think I would stop there. I would go ahead and do NGS if possible at that institution right off the bat, because I think, you know, catching those patients is very important and there's a high chance that you could cure some of these patients, even though they could be, you know, very advanced in their disease. Our data provides the first evidence about this, and I think it is worth revisiting the guidelines and, you know, using this data and also like expanding on it in further cohorts and trying to see whether our methodology for calling mismatch repair deficiency can apply to different panels across the country. There are other panels in top centers and also in commercial sequencing panels across the country that are used. And I think it is worth trying to see if this exact methodology is applicable across the board and not only in our center. Because we need to, at the end of the day, we need to have a generalizable signature. And I think the only way is to try it more and more and test it in a different cohort of patients and see if we see a replicable result in these cohorts.
In these last few minutes, I just wanted to, you know, ask if there are any limitations you feel are important to note, just as like caveats to this research.
We obviously didn't have matched normal testing. We only had tumor-only testing. So many of these patients could have germline mutations and could lead to Lynch syndrome. Not to say that I wouldn't expect to see a similar result whereby NGS would perform better. I actually would still expect NGS to perform better in this cohort, but we just didn't have that granular data because we didn't have the sequencing data of the normal cohort. And the other limitation is also like we did have a small data set of immunotherapy treated patients that had discordant data. So I think a larger data set is key, and always a validation cohort is important because, you know, we would like to see this not only validated in our center, but also other centers. So I think those are two main things I would mention.
I'd really be very enthusiastic and happy to see this validated also in other centers in terms of MMR signature calling. That would be really great. I want to add also to the benefits that there are currently also, you have to keep them in mind that this analysis has been done on advanced cancer patients with metastasis, and that the idea is there are currently some trials, I think, in late stages also that show that immunotherapy really as a neoadjuvant is really helpful for these patients who are MMR deficient. And so the earlier we detect those patients, the more likelihood we are to help them and prolong their survival.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OnClive On Air. Check back Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OnClive is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at OnClive. On Facebook, like us at OnClive and follow our OnClive page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of OnClive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you're there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OnClive On Air.